The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
This evening, I would like to read to you an essay by the Japanese Zen master Dogen. It's one of his most famous essays on Buddhist practice, and he's one of the most famous of the Zen teachers in Japan, started a whole lineage, whole tradition of Zen called Soto Zen. And it was an essay that he wrote describing his understanding of Buddhist practice to a layman, to a layperson. So rather than focusing on monastics, which he was trained, trained to train people in monastery, here's what he wrote to a layperson. It's kind of difficult to understand. It's kind of like, it might be best to approach it like poetry almost. But the piece has a number of very powerful statements. And even though you don't understand all of it, some of these statements, as you hear them, might be interesting for you to have them resonate inside or see what impact they have as you hear them. The essay in Japanese is called Genjo Koan. And koan is often in popular kind of people's idea, is a Zen story or enigmatic statement which a student would practice with, sit with, ponder, sometimes for a long time, and then they'd come to their teacher with an answer and get a response, and sometimes they'd pass the koan, sometimes they wouldn't. Sometimes the function of a koan is a kind of concentration focus, this koan, this question or the statement, this story, that gets the mind concentrated and then somehow brings the person to enlightenment. So it's called Genjo Koan. Koan also means, kind of has a colloquial Japanese meaning, a Chinese meaning, of a public case that we've brought in front of a judge. So if, like a court case or something, it'd be a case to be evaluated or judged. And but for Dogen, in his essay, he has a different understanding of koan. And rather than the koan being a question to be answered in some abstract way or to help guide you to some enlightenment in the future, an answer that you're going to bring, koans often are these old stories from China that people have put together, and there's books of koan collection. So rather than that, for him, the koan is the Genjo Koan. And the word Genjo means that which is manifesting itself right now. So it's the koan of what's happening right now. And there was one translator who translated into English this title, the title Genjo Koan, as the issue at hand. And that's where I got the title for this book of mine. So if you ever wondered why I called it the issue at hand, it has this kind of background in my Zen training because of this particular piece. And so I'm going to read you this. And here it's called, this particular translation translates the title as Actualizing the Fundamental Point. And it has to do with discovering practice, discovering realization right where you are. So rather than it being somewhere else or someplace else, it's right here. And so in the Soto Zen approach to practice, there's a kind of poignancy and power and dynamism to showing up and being present for this moment's experience. You don't want to analyze it too much. You don't want to bring in other teachings to it. You want to show up in a full, complete way to what's happening right now. And so this is kind of what's implied by the Genjo Koan. So Dogen writes, as all things are Buddha Dharma, as all things are within the purview of Buddhism, there is delusion and realization, practice, birth and death, and there are Buddhas and ordinary sentient beings. As myriad things are without an abiding self, there is no delusion, no realization, no Buddha, no sentient being, no birth and death. The Buddha way is basically leaping clear of the many and the one. Thus there are birth and death, delusion and realization, sentient beings and Buddhas. Even so, in attachment, blossoms fall, and in aversion, weeds spread. To carry yourself forward, to carry yourself forward and experience myriad things is delusion. That myriad things come forth and experience themselves is awakening. Those who have great realization of delusion are Buddhas. Those who are greatly deluded about realization are sentient beings. Further, there are those who continue realizing beyond realization, who are in delusion throughout delusion. When Buddhas are truly Buddhas, they do not necessarily notice that they are Buddhas. However, they are actualized Buddhas who go on actualizing Buddhas. To study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be actualized by the many things. When actualized by the many things, your body and mind, as well as the body and minds of others, drops away. No trace of realization remains, and this no trace continues endlessly. When you first seek the Dharma, you imagine you are far away from its environs. But Dharma is already correctly transmitted. You are immediately your original self. When you ride in a boat and watch the shore, you might assume that the shore is moving. But when you keep your eyes closely on the boat, you can see that the boat moves. Similarly, if you examine myriad things with a confused body and mind, you might suppose that your mind and nature are permanent. When you practice intimately and return to where you are, it will be clear that nothing at all has unchanging self. Firewood becomes ash, and it does not become firewood again. Yet, do not suppose that the ash is future and the firewood past. You should understand that firewood abides in the phenomenal expression of firewood, which fully includes past and future and is independent of past and future. Ash abides in the phenomenal expression of ash, which fully includes future and past. Just as firewood does not become firewood again after it is ash, you do not return to birth after death. This being so, it is an established way in Buddha Dharma to deny that birth turns into death. Accordingly, birth is understood as no birth. It is an unshakable teaching in Buddha's discourses that death does not turn into birth. Accordingly, death is understood as no death. Birth is an expression complete this moment. Death is an expression complete this moment. They are like winter and spring. You do not call winter the beginning of spring, nor summer the end of spring. Enlightenment is like the moon reflected on the water. The moon does not get wet, nor is the water broken. Although its light is wide and great, the moon is reflected even in a puddle an inch wide. The whole moon and the entire sky are reflected in dewdrops on the grass, or even in one drop of water. Enlightenment does not divide you, just as the moon does not break the water. You cannot hinder enlightenment, just as a drop of water does not hinder the moon in the sky. The depth of the drop is the height of the moon. Each reflection, however long or short its duration, manifests the vastness of the dewdrop and realizes the limitlessness of the moonlight in the sky. When Dharma does not fill your whole body and mind, you think it is already sufficient. When Dharma fills your mind, your body and mind, you understand that something is missing. For example, when you sail out in a boat to the middle of an ocean where no land is in sight and view the four directions, the ocean looks circular and does not look any other way. But the ocean is neither round nor square. Its features are infinite in variety. It is like a palace. It is like a jewel. It only looks circular as far as you can see at that time. All things are like this. Though there are many features in the dusty world and the world beyond conditions, you see and understand only what your eye of practice can reach. In order to learn the nature of the myriad things, you must know that although they may look round or square, the other features of oceans and mountains are infinite in variety. Whole worlds are there. It is not only around you, but also directly beneath your feet and in a drop of water. A fish swims in the ocean, and no matter how far it swims, there is no end to the water. A bird flies in the sky, and no matter how far it flies, there is no end to the air. However, the fish and the bird have never left their elements. When their activity is large, their field is large. When their need is small, their field is small. Thus, each of them totally covers its full range, and each of them totally experiences its realm. If the bird leaves the air, it will die at once. If the fish leaves the water, it will die at once. Know that water is life, and air is life. The bird is life, and the fish is life. Life must be the bird, and life must be the fish. It is possible to illustrate this with more analogies. Practice, enlightenment, and people are like this. Now, if a bird or fish tries to reach the end of its element before moving in it, the bird or this fish will not find its way or its place. When you find your place where you are, practice occurs, actualizing the fundamental point. When you find your way at this moment, practice occurs, actualizing the fundamental point. For the place, the way, is neither large nor small, neither yours nor others. The place, the way, is not carried over from the past, and it is not merely arising now. Accordingly, in the practice enlightenment of the Buddha way, meeting one thing is mastering it. Doing one practice is practicing completely. Here is the place. Here the way unfolds. The boundary of realization is not distinct, for the realization comes forth simultaneously with the mastery of Buddha Dharma. Do not suppose that what you realize becomes your knowledge and is grasped by your consciousness. Although actualized immediately, the inconceivable may not be apparent. Its appearance is beyond your knowledge. Zen Master Bao Che of Mount Mayu was fanning himself. A monk approached and said, "Master, the nature of wind is permanent, and there is no place it does not reach. Why then do you fan yourself?" "Although you understand that the nature of the wind is permanent," Bao Che replied, "you do not understand the meaning of it reaching everywhere." "What is the meaning of it reaching everywhere?" asked the monk again. The master just kept fanning himself. The monk bowed deeply. The actualization of the Buddha Dharma, the vital path of its correct transmission, is like this. If you say that you do not need to fan yourself because the nature of wind is permanent, and you have wind without fanning, you will understand that neither permanence nor the nature of wind. The nature of wind is permanent. Because of that, the wind of the Buddha's house brings forth the gold of the earth and makes fragrant the cream of the long river. Written in the year 1233. So, before I say something about this, maybe some of you will say something about what it was like to hear this. Anything stand out or strike you? Or quite lovely, this idea that those who have great realization of delusion are Buddhas. Those who are greatly deluded about realization are sentient beings. So many people are pursuing some idea of, you know, there's this great enlightenment out there, and if you finally see and understand it, you'll have the keys to the kingdom, everything will be fine. And he says here that what makes a Buddha is someone who really understands delusion. So rather than focusing on the light, kind of focus on the darkness. You know, what's really the problems? What's going on with you? And then he says, to study Buddhism is to study the self. And even though you'll say there's no abiding self, there's no true essential self, you're still here. And so Buddhism is not discovered in books like reading this. But really, Buddhism is discovered here by understanding what's going on here with yourself. And so perhaps your delusion, and to look, where am I deluded? Where am I confused? Where am I attached? What am I clinging to? Where's my aversion? And to take these things seriously and not be dismissive of them. And so there's some people will, you know, understand this, will see that the very thing that they're practicing to overcome is the jewel, is the thing that they can practice with, the thing they have to address and meet. And so your delusions, your confusion, your clinging, your fears, your hates, even though they're painful, there's something very powerful about turning towards them and practicing with them, being mindful of them, not dismissing them, not saying this is bad and terrible, but to somehow wake up to them, to really show up here with this, and to see clearly what is there, to see clearly, oh, this is clinging, to see clearly this is delusion. There's a freedom to be found. Many people assume that freedom is to be found only by when these things are completely gone, once and for all. So he says, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. The beautiful thing is, if you really go and be fully present for what's here in an unself-conscious way, then the self, your self-consciousness disappears. All the ways in which we identify and judge and evaluate ourselves of what's going on, but it's just this tremendous power. You show up completely for this thing. You kind of, you so completely that you kind of, so like you slough off your self-conscious concerns. And then to forget the self is to be actualized. The word in Japanese is actually confirmed. To forget the self is to be confirmed by myriad things. So you don't know who you are, at least from the Zen tradition, they say, you don't know who you are until the world tells you who you are. You don't go around carrying some idea that this is who I am, and I'm so-and-so, and then prove yourself in the world. That, he said earlier, is delusion. To carry yourself forward and experience myriad things is delusion. To assert yourself in a certain kind of way that look, I'm so great, and, or I'm so terrible, and carry yourself that way. But that myriad things come forth and experience themselves as awakening. And here he says, to forget the self is to be confirmed or actualized by myriad things. Things will tell you who you are. The world will tell you. They'll show up, you'll manifest. And it's kind of what's nice is that some people are frightened by the idea of somehow dropping their self-conscious concerns, their attachment to self. And then I won't exist. But you still exist. But you exist in this tremendous intimacy with the world, where the world kind of comes to you and fills you and moves through you in a beautiful way. Some Western translators have translated this line, to forget the self is to be intimate with all things. Though that's not the original. And then when you first seek the Dharma, you assume that's far away from you. It's something distant. How could me have anything to do with it? But actually, the Dharma is right here. And then this idea of riding a boat. And you think that, when you're riding a boat, sometimes, like many of us don't ride boats anymore, but you might have done it on a train or a bus where it's moving, but you don't really notice it's moving. It's like you look at a train and you see the mountain far in the distance. It looks like the mountains are moving, but, you're kind of, you're not moving. And so this kind of optical illusion that's common. And so it says the same thing happens with our own body and mind, that we think that we are not moving, but all the things around us are. But in fact, if you look carefully, you'll find that everything is in moving. Everything is moving, including... and so there's no abiding self, no essential thing that stays unchanged. When the Dharma does not fill your whole body and mind, you think it is already sufficient. Isn't that great? When you don't quite understand what's going on, it's easy to think, I got it. this is it. But when the Dharma fills your body and mind, which you really kind of hear fully, then you understand that something is missing. Isn't that bad news? You thought that this Buddhism was supposed to kind of give you the final answer once and for all and everything. But actually, you understand something is missing. And then this example of sailing out in the middle of the ocean just seems round, the horizon, But the ocean's not round. It has all these different shapes. So how we see, what we see of the world, it doesn't necessarily provide an accurate picture of what's actually there. And with Dogen, there's many different perspectives for looking at any given thing at all. And so the suggestion is you have one particular vantage point right now, but don't settle upon that as being how things are really, truly. You can change your perspective and see things from many different angles. And he says it's so varied, actually, what's happening. Even in a drop of water, there are myriad of worlds, myriad of different things happening. And then this idea that the fish and swims in the ocean is always, and if it tries to go beyond the ocean, nothing really happens. Now, if a bird or fish tries to reach the end of its element before moving in it, the bird and this fish will not find its way or its place. When you find your place where you are, practice occurs. This is a very strong, very important statement for the Zen people. When you find out where you are, when you find your place where you are, then practice occurs. And so there's a little saying that goes around the Vipassana circle sometimes that says, if you want to go from A to B, travel from A to B, be completely A. Enter this moment here. Enter it fully. Be it fully. Don't focus, on trying to get some other place. Focus on studying the self here, being present here, finding your place here. Where's your place right now? And sometimes in the Zen tradition, when they talk about the Genjo Koan, they say that every situation you're in has a question. And the question is, how do you show up and respond to this particular situation? What's being asked for you in this moment, in this situation? And so there's always kind of this relaxed kind of discovering what is it, the different, you're in different with different people, what does this situation require? I was at a barbecue for Memorial Day today. That, you know, what's required here in this situation? And then earlier in the day I was closing a retreat. And it wasn't a usual retreat, it was a family retreat with all these kids for the Memorial Day weekend for a couple of days. And so what's the appropriate place there? What's going on there? How do you show up for that and that situation? And so it's not, again, not looking beyond yourself, not looking some other land, some other distant, beautiful palace of enlightenment far away, but how do you show up here where you happen to be? And you all happen to be right at IMC right now, so this is where it's at. But if you hadn't come, it wouldn't have been here. When you find your way at this moment, practice occurs, actualizing the fundamental point. For the place, the way, okay. Here is the place. Here the way unfolds. The boundary of realization is not distinct. Do not suppose that what you realize becomes your knowledge and is grasped by your consciousness. Although actualized immediately, the inconceivable may not be apparent. Its appearance is beyond your knowledge. And the final thing about this fan. So the monk says to the teacher, you know, the nature of the wind is permanent. So why do you have to fan yourself? And this is an, kind of in this Mahayana Buddhist tradition, they have this idea that you have Buddha nature, and that your Buddha nature is kind of always there. It's kind of permanent. And so if you're already a Buddha, if you already have Buddha nature, why would you have to practice? That's what he's saying. You know, it's not, if you're already a Buddha nature, why do you have to practice? And the Zen master responds, just continues fanning himself. And so the implication here is that you discover the practice, the truth, awakening, for them, maybe the Buddha nature, in doing the practice. It doesn't exist separate from the practice. And so you have to practice, but in the practice it's found. And so for in this particular Buddhist tradition, they have this compound word called practice realization. Realization occurs together with practice. But without practice, there can be no realization. But there's no realization separate from practice, and no practice separate from realization for them. They come together. And so this has to do with, but it means showing up completely, as full as you can for this moment, this situation. And there's something about this moment, this time, this place you're in, that can be your liberation, can be your place of profound practice, no matter where you are. It could be at the DMV. It can be maybe tomorrow you have to go to the court and deal with something. Maybe you have to, you know, all kinds of difficult situations. And so the question is, you know, isn't like, oh, how I can get back to retreat? How can I get back to my meditation cushion? The Zen people say, how do you discover it here in this situation right now? And then it ends with the nature of wind is permanent. Because of that, the wind of the Buddha's house brings forth the gold of the earth and makes fragrant the cream of the long river. Cream of the long river, I think cream is supposed to be some allusion to a Chinese myth or something, that there's this beautiful, sweet cream in some river they had. And so here he says, you know, that because there's this because of the nature of practice realization, because in your practice you find realization, the wind of the Buddha's house, the permanent wind of the Buddha's of practice, brings forth all this beauty, gold, all this value, what's precious in our life. Brings forth the gold of the earth and the fragrant cream of the long river. It doesn't bring forth, you know, real gold, but rather the gold in you, the gold that you can, that's valuable for you. So, now do you have anything you want to say? Or would you rather just find your place? Please.
I found myself thinking about how in that story it sounded a lot like the way the monk wanted to react was just to be immersed in everything. So like the sort of the dualism of yourself and other things faded away, so they blended together instead. And I found myself trying to think about how that contrasts when we talk about being mindful of everything. Because sometimes when I think about being mindful, I think like there's always sort of a distance between me watching what I'm doing and being present at the same time.
Great point. And actually, it's a very common criticism that Zen people make of what we do, is they'll say it sounds very dualistic, it sounds very separate from your experience. And it can be that way for people sometimes. Especially some people bring a lot of self into the practice with them, and so they're operating as this agent who's always watching and doing, and you know, so that agent is very strong for some people, and it's very dualistic, very they can have very strong ideas of what's supposed to happen or what's supposed to be happening and what is happening that keep them separate. Some people think a lot about what's going on, and they experience everything by how they think about it But mindfulness is, as mindfulness gets stronger, it tends to highlight the friction. It tends to highlight the places of tension or the places of suffering or holding. And if we're keeping ourselves at a distance, that itself is friction. That itself has some tension in it. And that tends to fall away with time. And so slowly over time, as people practice and show up for what's going on, you know, they realize, I'm not quite here for it yet. I didn't quite show up. I need to let go of being at a distance. I need to let go of these ideas I have of what's going on. I need to let go of thinking about it, because thinking is, you know, a little bit abstract. And so with time, mindfulness becomes clearer and simpler and simpler. And a lot of these other things, separation tends to fall away. And at some point, there's no self practicing mindfulness anymore. Mindfulness is being practiced, but there's no sense in the practicing of it that there's a self operating. And so there's less and less of that separation going on. Make some sense? So in the beginning of this piece, Dogen writes, you know, he says that when you encounter, paraphrase it, but when you know, you're going about your life just happily, maybe, or not, and then you learn about Buddhism. And now, because of the Buddhist teachings, you understand that, oh, there's a difference between realization and delusion. I was just living my life before. I didn't know anything about realization. And now there's enlightenment, enlightened people and all that. And because of that, then there has to be this delusion, right? People who don't understand. So now we have this distinction or this duality. And now there's practice. You know, I didn't have to practice before. I grew up, I was happy, I was running around the neighborhood. And now, you know, this family retreat, you know, they're telling me to sit down and be quiet and practice. You know, these kids would have preferred to have been playing. And then there's Buddhas and sentient beings. There's people who somehow realized what Buddhism is about, and there's people who haven't. And so here it's described. So there's, all again, a kind of distinction or separation. So that comes with Buddhism, with Buddhist teachings. It's very hard to avoid it. But then, when you realize that there's no abiding self, there's no eternal, essential self that's in the picture, then these dichotomies or dualisms fall away. Then there is no delusion, no realization, no Buddha, no sentient beings, no birth and death. Now, this is, you know, it isn't like you go back to what you were like before you encountered Buddhism, but you've kind of gone further in this dropping of all that stuff. But Dogen doesn't want to remain there, because that itself allows a certain kind of dualism between being dualistic and being non-dualistic. It's so that also has a certain problem. So the way that Dogen kind of takes it to the next step, he says the Buddha way is basically leaping clear of the many and the one, leaping clear of the tendency of the mind to conceptualize, discriminate between all the different things in the world, and non-discrimination, non-conceptualization. Non-dualism tends to be non-conceptual. You don't see a distinction between things. But to stay there is kind of a delusion as well. It's kind of partial. It's like only one perspective. So he says, so somehow there's leaping clear of both duality and non-duality, between multiplicity and things are just one or something. And so he talks about that. So there are these possibilities in practice can happen. But then he has this very, very, I think significant or powerful line after this kind of very abstract. This summarizes this little huge complex issues of that went through Buddhist philosophy for many, many, many centuries in a very simple way. But then he adds this at the end. Yet in attachment, blossoms fall, and in aversion, weeds spread. And this is a very rich kind of suggestion, but one of the suggestions of here, interpreting this, is that no matter what your understanding is of what Buddhism is, whether you understand it that there is Buddhas and sentient beings, whether there's practice and realization, whether there's no realization, no practice, there's no dualities, there's no Buddhas, no sentient beings, or whether you find this kind of next higher step of leaping beyond it, where you can live in the world of diversity and live in the world of discrimination, but at the same time there is no oneness and separation. No matter what, if you're attached, the beautiful blossoms will fall away, will fade away, will get destroyed. And if you have aversion to anything, the weeds in the mind will grow. And this calls back to kind of really basic Buddhism, the heart of it all, which, you know, you can forget all the philosophy, that if you cling, you destroy something really beautiful. And if you push away, you allow something unwanted and maybe harmful to grow and develop. So the rest of this essay could be seen from the perspective of what it's like to live a life that has neither clinging in it or resistance or pushing away. So that was a little Soto Zen primer. So I hope that was okay for you. Certainly different than how I usually do it here. So it's nice to get some different perspectives in this myriad, this wide, big ocean of ours. So thank you.